Accession number 27185, rule 6.
Major Barras, rule 6. You said you were on the canal at Nashorn, facing southwest, across the La Bassée Canal. What kind of positions did you have there?
We were mostly dug in, as far as I remember, along there. I'm sure that there must have been, there were houses along the embankment there. So I'm pretty sure we also had positions in the houses themselves. But it's not always a good idea to have a position in a house unless you've got it all sandbagged up and you're quite sure that you've camouflaged successfully, because there's nothing worse than poking a gun out of a window if you really want to get shot yourself. So I think we probably only fell back on the windows at the back, if we did at all, to give cover for the trenches in front. And also, of course, to use as company headquarters and that sort of thing.
What was the view like forward from your own platoon position?
Well, we worked across the canal, and there was an area, open area, and then it was wooded behind. So beyond that, we couldn't see.
Roughly how far was it from your front line to the woods?
Probably about 300 or 400 yards, I think, by the time we got to the woods, because there was quite an area in front.
That's a good battle range, isn't it? 300 or 400 yards?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You mean from rifle and machine gun fire?
Rifle fire.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And what was the condition of the canal like? Was the canal crossable, or was it...
Well, we had a bit of a problem because there were a lot of barges there. And I don't know whether they come down from somewhere else, but they were all sort of stacked up. Well, they weren't stacked up above one another, but they seemed to reach right across the canal. So we had to go about destroying them.
How did you do that?
Well, in the end, we had to burn them. We tried hacking away. We tried moving them around. But in the end, we set fire to a lot of them.
Were they empty, or were they carrying
Oh, I think they were mostly empty, as far as I can remember.
Was there anyone on them?
No.
So the crews had deserted them?
Oh, I think so, yes, they were just left. I mean, the war had been going on for at least 2 weeks by now, if not more. It must be 2 weeks, yeah.
And what about your... the inhabitants, were they still in Mershal? The locals who you'd got to know?
I think there were one or two still around, but they kept inside if they were, because there was quite a lot of shelling and so forth later. When we first got there, it was quiet, there was nothing there at all. But on the second day, I think it was, some armoured cars appeared on the other side. Who obviously weren't aware that we were there. So we managed to destroy two or three of them, I think. And also some Germans appeared on motorcycles. And I can't remember in what order or how they came, but certainly the motorcyclists had no idea we were there. They sort of got off and strolling around lighting fags and things. And so we shot them, and the rest ran off into the woods. So they were all came out of the woods and were in this area in front, so they were easy targets.
So did they come separately, the armoured cars first?
I can't remember which way around it was. Logically, one would expect the motorcyclists to arrive first, because that's how the Germans operated, with their combination cyclists with a Spandau or some sort of gun mounted on it. And then the armoured cars came up behind, but if they didn't have any motorcyclists, and presume the armoured cars came first.
How did you destroy the armoured cars? What weapons did you use?
Well, I'm happy to say that the boys' anti-tank rifle did its stuff here. Quite apart from killing the chap who fired it. But it did have an effect. I think we also had them two-pounders there. I'm not sure whether we had an anti-tank platoon in those days.
There was usually an anti-tank company at brigade level, I think.
Yes, they probably came up and supported us. Mm. But of course the Germans running around the place were disposed of by just ordinary small arms fire, yeah.
Did you have any notion that you've got artillery in support of you at this stage?
We did on occasions, yes. Because we had those, by then they got those 25 pounders, which were the excellent gun. And now and again we had an FOO would come up and we would get support from the gunners, yeah.
So the German reconnaissance elements came up, you destroyed some of them, the survivors ran off into the woods.
Yes.
So evidently the Germans must then have realised that there was somebody there.
Right. Well, this is where we come to Tony Owen, who we were talking about in his book earlier, because he and another, I think one of his corporals, they got in a little boat and rowed across when it all died down. And he went looking around inside the armoured cars and brought out some papers and maps and things and brought them back, which were sent up the line and apparently were quite useful.
That sounds rather careless on the part of the German reconnaissance troops.
Well, I suppose. Well, yes, except that most of them were dead.
Mm, but to have carried such things with them.
Oh, yes, indeed, yeah. I don't know how deep they were or how variable they were, but even a marked map showing where they were going would be of use because that would give an indication as to line of advance of a whole army, really.
Yes.
If you've got some other indications. And then, of course, they started, they brought up mortars and shelling, and that went on for 2 or 3 days. I don't think they ever had any intention of crossing the canal. I think what we had here was a sort of guard, a sort of flank guard of the main army, which was, as we know, was moving along south of us towards the coast. And I think these were just on the flanks, just securing the flanks of the army. I don't think they had an intention of crossing. Well, they couldn't now. there must have been a lot more behind who decided it wasn't worth what had happened up there. It wasn't worth going up and doing any more.
So you're getting fire, but how close to the canal did they get? Did they take up positions in the woods, or did they get close to the canal bank, to their side of it?
What do you mean, the armoured cars and the...
No, when you said they started putting mortar and...
Well, I don't know. They came from somewhere behind the woods, or in the woods. I mean, it's the clearing there. Mm. I mean, a mortar is the easiest thing to stick up and start firing, as long as you haven't got any branches over your overhead. And then it was towards the end that the artillery started firing on us as well. Mm. So they must have diverted something to look after us.
Was this a constant rate of fire on your positions, or was it intermittent?
Oh, it was intermittent, yes.
So it's harassing fire?
It was more harassing fire. I mean, it wasn't sort of the sort of bombardment you get before an attack. Mm. It was sporadic.
What sort of positions had your chaps got themselves done by the time that started? Did they have overhead cover on their trenches? Or?
No, I don't think so. No, they've got a run to. Overhead cover on trenches was, certainly the front line, was not encouraged.
Why was that?
Well, because it gave you a limited view around. And the same way as balaclava helmets were not permitted. Because you obviously couldn't hear what was going on, or even how cold it was. So, no, I don't think we ever used overhead cover, not even in Normandy later. Sorry.
Did you have any means of retaliating against the enemy fire? Your own battalion mortars, for example, do you remember if they came?
Well, they would have done if they'd been able to find out where the mortars were firing from. But this is always a difficulty. I don't think they responded. They could have done. They might have just put down some to say, right, we're here and we don't like what you're doing and watch it. But I don't recall. I don't remember.
do you remember if you sent forward any patrols at night for reconnaissance or security?
No, we didn't send anything across the canals because we pretty well, apart from a small rowing boat, which Tony Owen used to get across. By the way, he got a military cross for that. And the chap who went with him got an MM. Mm. Apart from that, there was nothing to go across on, really. I mean, what bridges there were had been blown as usual. And we had a Moroccans, this is where we had the Moroccans on our right, who spent the time firing their machine guns.
At random, you're saying?
Absolutely, yes.
Did you ever get the idea that the Germans might be trying to get, across?
No. I'm pretty certain they weren't, because we never saw anything. We never saw any troops on the ground again. All we got was this mortar and shell fire. Mm. So, as I say, I'm sure they were just a flank guard. Mm. The one thing I remember once seeing there, I was looking down the road towards the canal, I saw a sort of burly figure approaching me up the middle of the road. It was a corporal from the carrier platoon, I think, wearing a top hat and carrying a multicoloured parasol above his head just after we'd received a shower of shells. Got a lot of catcalls from the trenches as he went up, but I mean, that was the sort of spirit of the chaps at that time.
Were they still in good heart?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Did you suffer any casualties as a result of this?
Yeah, I think we did suffer one or two there. Yes.
In your platoon?
I can't remember.
Mm. Do you remember what the arrangements were for dealing with casualties?
Well, we had an RAP, yes, which was the regimental aid post, which was manned by bandsmen who'd been trained as medics. We had a doctor there. I remember the Sergeant Busty Anchoret, I remember, who was the sergeant in charge, who was the charge of the RAP under the doctor, who had been bassoon player in the band. He was a terrific character. He was still there in Normandy, I remember. But any casualties went there. And then they were evacuated under normal conditions to a field ambulance. But now, of course, we were beginning to find that we had no lines of communication. Wounded, we managed somehow to get back to somewhere where they could be treated. And most of them were taken straight down to the coast, I think. There was no bothering about trying to get them anywhere else. Food was becoming scarce now.
I was going to ask you about whether your line of supply was being serviced and you were still getting rations coming up.
No, food was becoming very scarce indeed, and we were getting quite hungry on occasions. But we had a very enterprising quartermaster, old Captain Silas Crane. He looked like Mr. Pickwick. You wouldn't think he was a quartermaster, but he certainly was. He belonged to that magnificent band of quartermasters. And by going round himself and his staff and so forth, and raiding abandoned dumps and naffies, and kept us fed up to, not as much as we would like, obviously. I remember on one occasion seeing a couple of cows walking sort of docilely behind the butcher's three tonner. And then, of course, there was the MTO, Captain Sheffield, known as Chef by everybody. He kept his water trucks topped up all the time. So we just about had enough to keep us going. And I think there might have been some backlog store of tins of bully beef is still in the quartermaster's trucks.
What about local suppliers, in the area you were in?
Oh, I don't know. There may have been a bit of plundering of shops and things. I know, I think it was probably here that I got a wine shop given to me. There was just behind my platoon headquarters, there was a French wine shop, and the bloke who owned it came down, had a look at it, and there were some shells came over, and he looked at me and said, shrugged his shoulders and looked at me and said, "You can have it." So I said, "Thank you very much." But it was a bit dangerous, actually, because there was all kinds of stuff in there, So what we did, the platoon sergeant and I, we got hold of the beer, and we got all that out, and then we rationed one bottle per man per day or something, and left the rest. Now, I believe the Moroccans got hold of the rest, I was told later, and caused quite a bit of mayhem in the area. I don't think they were fit for frontline duties for quite a few days after that. But apart from that, I mean, there wasn't any food coming through.
Did you have any liaison with the Moroccans to try and coordinate?
I don't know. Well, we probably did. Mm. Not at my level. Mm. We had a French liaison officer with us.
What was he like?
He was very good, actually. You won't be surprised to know he was called Maurice. He came to us at the very beginning when we first went over there in 1939. Oh, he was very good. He was a lieutenant. We liked him very much. He got on very well with him. I was told at the Bataan headquarters when he came down to breakfast on the first day we were in France, well, one of the first early days, and they were still keeping up the old traditions of the officers' mess. They were typed menus and heaven knows what. And one of the things for breakfast is eggs to order. And you can have poached, fried, whatever you like. He came down, looked at us, and the waiter came up, "What'd you like?" So he said, "I'd like eggs to order, please." And I said, "Yes, but what type?" He said, "No, just eggs to order will do me fine. Thank you very much." I think he learned how to order his poached egg about two or three days after that.
What sort of things was he doing for you?
Well, he was our liaison between ourselves and the civilian population. Mm. I mean, if we wanted billets and things, then he went round with the billeting officer, talking to the civilian mayors and dignitaries of these various villages to get billets. And if there were any problems, then he was the guy who we got to. He went off and tried to sort it out for us. I don't think we ever used him in conjunction with, or we may have done with the Moroccans, but I don't think we used him much in conjunction with sort of inter-service communications.
You said that you'd seen French and Belgian troops, presumably in Belgium. But what impression have you got of them overall?
Well, it was mixed. I felt sorry for the Belgians somehow. We heard they did put up an excellent fight for the first two or three days. But one can understand, after that they decided that it wasn't worth going on. They didn't have the tanks the Germans had. They didn't have the airplanes. And what was worse, of course, they were near home. And so the ones we saw later on were the stragglers, the ones who were going home. Of the French, we didn't see too much of the French. We saw some of the French infantry. And they were, they were the worst ones we saw. I know that there were instances where the French did exceedingly well and put up a very good fight. What we did come across, and this was at Merchamps, was their tanks. They had some tanks which came in support of us. And I got talking to some of their tank commanders, and they were excellent types. The old French army. Their morale was good, they were intelligent, they knew what was going on, and they were prepared to fight.
How were they deployed to support you?
I can't remember. I can just remember the tanks, and I can remember standing by them and talking up at them.
Do you remember what sort of tanks they were? What did they look like?
Well, they were French tanks. Mm. Chars, they called them.
The Char B was the heavy tank. Yes. Char B.
It could have been. It wasn't. It was quite a good. It was a battle. It was a main battle tank. Mm. It wasn't a light tank, so it could have been a Char B. I'm not sure. I didn't know. I wouldn't know.
Have you got any idea of roughly how many there were?
I think we had a squadron there. That'd have been about, I don't know, the English was about 16, 20, but I only saw two or three which were allocated to my area.
To your platoon area?
Well, to that area. They weren't under my command or anything like that, or even in support of me. But I suppose they were there in support of the brigade or the division, because we got the Moroccans next to us.
What did they do? Were they actually on the canal bank, or were they back from the canal?
They were back. Right? Yeah. They were back. The ones I spoke to were certainly back, and I think they were there to support any attack which came in. They'd be called forward. But certainly, as a tank, they wouldn't be up front, because there were no hull-down positions there at all.
Did they get into hull-down positions?
No, I don't remember. Well, they might have done, not out of my sight. I don't.
Yes. Yeah. Did you see them actually going into action at all?
No. But I'm sure they would have done if they were needed to do so.
So you got into position along the canal. Mm. The Germans discovered you were there. Mm. They put down a certain amount of harassing artillery and mortar fire. Mm. And apart from that, they sort of left you alone.
Yeah.
How long did that go on for?
We were there for about 4 days, which is the longest we stayed anywhere. And then we were on the move again.
What happened then when you started
Well, we got enough again. Got enough flat feet again.
We did.
I don't know whether... I know we had transport on some occasions when it could be drummed up, but it was only on a very odd occasion. Most of the time we were on our flat feet. I don't know whether it was now or earlier, which I mentioned to you when we were talking earlier, about the time when our company commander had his platoon commanders together. It was still B Company, and the company commander at this time was Captain Henry Jones, who was TA, and eventually was to become chairman of the gas board in Britain. And I can remember calling an O group and saying, we are to stay here for the last man to the last round. That's the only time I've ever been asked to do that, and the only time I've ever heard it. But, of course, we didn't, and eventually we were hauled out again.
Do you remember anything about the place where that happened?
No, I don't. I've got a picture in my mind of him saying this, because it's not the sort of thing you forget lightly.
Fairly striking announcement.
Absolutely, yes. Which goes first, the man or the round? We never discovered. But I can see a small house behind, but that's about it. And as I say, I can't remember whether it's before we got to Mershon or afterwards.
Do you remember if you passed that on down to the platoon?
Oh yes, we got dug in there.
Yeah, you told the platoon.
Yes.
This is it.
Yes.
And how did they react to that?
I just took it as something. I mean, you've got to remember we were all pretty tired by now. I mean, if somebody said go and jump in the river and or burn yourself, we'd probably have done it without sort of thinking about it. You know, well, probably not as extreme as that, but we were becoming automatic. But when you, yes, certainly there was a certain amount of, I suppose, surprise at being at this. But then it didn't last very long. I don't know how long we were there, probably a day, or most two, before we eventually got the orders to withdraw again. Otherwise, we'd been stuck out on our own there, and we'd have been surrounded and put in the bag.
When you were doing the withdrawal from Mershon beyond, were you doing it in the same way as you'd been on the way to Mershon with... sections alternately on either side of the road?
Oh yes, yes. Of course, it was very effective from the air attack point of view. Yes, we kept that up.
Did you withdraw from those positions along the canal in daylight or at night?
Ah, this I can't remember.
Do you remember if you did a stealth withdrawal as you've done previously on the Charleroi Canal, or if you?
Well, you see, we didn't. We weren't under pressure from any enemy, like we were, apart from sort of long, well, short-distance mortaring and long-distance artillery. We weren't under any pressure. I've no doubt that the Germans were watching us.
Yes.
Because even though they weren't in the open, they were amongst the trees there.
Presumably they must have had OPs to direct the mortar and artillery.
Well, they're absolutely right. So they were watching us. So presumably we were very careful how we got out. It may have been at night. But then, of course, the time of withdrawal may not be left to our...
Wouldn't necessarily be your discretion.
No, exactly. It might have to do with what was going on elsewhere. Mm. Get out quick before you get surrounded.
Do you remember the route that you took after Mershon?
Well, a day after that, we finished up in a place called Fromel. and we halted there. We didn't have any... frontline commitment there at all. We just concentrated, stopped and just stayed there for a day. But whilst we were there, we got the heaviest air attack that we'd had so far. As I think I said earlier, we'd been very lucky with casualties for various reasons, the way we marched down the road, the cover we got from the trees and so forth. But here we got the lot. And we had a lot of casualties here. A lot of transport was knocked out. Carriers, 3-ton lorries. The ammunition truck went up in a shower of explosions and smoke. I was told that it wasn't us that they were after, but a convoy going through the town. But either they got it as well, or else we got the lot.
What form of attack did that take? What was
I can't remember. I can't remember whether it was, as you say, pattern or whether it was dive bombing. Mm. Of course, this frustrating thing about the Stukas was that they were so vulnerable normally. I mean, they even came down with their wheels, undercarriage down. I mean, the RAF made absolute mincemeat of them if they could ever find them later.
Did you ever see any RAF aircraft up to this point?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's possible that aircraft we saw flying high up could have been a squadron of Spitfires or Hurricanes, but never identified. I know they did good work behind us and shooting down quite a lot of Luftwaffe, which we might have come our way. But they didn't have enough aircraft to stop them, because a lot got through.
And you couldn't identify them if they were flying that high?
No. It wasn't until afterwards. Mm. Actually, I mean, soldiers say, where is it? Where are they? Mm. Where's the RAF? And why haven't we got these Spitfires? That sort of thing. But it wasn't until afterwards that we heard that they had sent out and lost quite a number, too.
Do you remember what the casualty list was at Formel?
I can't. I know we had at least one officer killed there, and a number of other casualties as well.
What about your own platoon? Were they?
Well, I think we had one or two as well there. Yes. Yeah, but I just don't remember actually. I know we had an officer killed. I remember that, and I know we had a number of killed. And I remember the RSM Sutton, called Mutt Sutton, which is a name he got in India, I think. Every inch an RSM, he was about 6'2", he had a presence. He was a great RSM. He apparently got in, because RSM's responsible for ammunition in Tallinn. Now he can't run around with his pace stick shouting at people on the playground. That'd give him something to do. But he got into one of these trucks, I think, which got ammunition in it, and drove it out before it could catch from the other one. So that saved some of the ammunition for us. And his incidentally, RSM Sutton's picture is in the National Army Museum. I went in there once and I was walking past a picture and I did a double take and I sort of looked at this character and there he was, complete with his steel helmet and gas mask on his chest and everything, and there he was, RSM Sutton. Yes, he went to the tower afterwards, not to have his head off, but he became chief Yeoman Warder. Yeah. Anyway, that was from L. That was the biggest pasting we got from the air, well, the most effective one. We may have got.
And that was on the way when you were approaching the town, not actually in.
No, it was in the town. We got there. We'd come off the road, and we were sort of concentrating, and I think that's what got us the casualties, really, because we were
too close together.
We were probably too close together. Yeah, I know some carriers were knocked out. I think I mentioned that as well. We were only there for a day, I think, and then we were on the move again.
Had you been ordered to defend from L then?
No.
You were just going through it?
Yeah, we were just going through it. We weren't. We had no frontline commitment at all. And we weren't. Well, I mean, the frontline was anywhere in those days, but as far as we knew, we weren't very close to a frontline. So we were really stopping on the way. And I think must be here or shortly afterwards that the CO, I didn't mention the fact, I don't think, that our CO got involved in a car accident on the way up to Brussels.
No, you didn't mention that.
Well, what happened is he was in his car and he got involved in a car accident. We were told it was a Belgian's on the way down, and he had to be evacuated. And the second in command, who was a Major Claude Wilson, took over. Henry Blest, who was the CO, Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blest, came back again after we'd been, I think sometime whilst we were in Brussels itself, or just after. He stayed with us for a short time, but his wounds hadn't healed up and were causing him problems, so he was evacuated again.
He came back too soon.
He came back too soon, yeah. And we didn't see him again until we got back to the UK when he was fully restored. So at this...